Welcome back to our Groundskeeper Chat series. I am your host, Meg Krueger, and we are live from this booth only in Daytona Beach. Yes. And I am joined by my co-host for this episode, Mr. Christopher Bell.
All right.
And also Mr. Larry DeVito of the Minnesota Twins. Larry was one of our 2024 Pioneers in the Field class members this year. But that wasn't the first time he's been stepping on the scene. Everyone's known about him for decades at this rate. And one of the biggest things that stood out to me when we talked, and I don't even know if I necessarily made it the focal point of your profile, but it was something that resonated with me, was you said, you know, we're the type of guys and gals in this industry, head down, get the job done. You know, there's little room for, you know, self-promotion in a right. sense, but how necessary it is, and how that visibility that you create only helps the next guy along. So not seeing it as this, you know, icky thing where it's like I'm talking about myself, but really seeing it as, hey, we're all helping each other when we promote what we do and how we do it. Talk a little bit about that, how that, you know, has been a thread throughout your career.
Sure. I think what you'll find with the people at this show in our industry is they all have pretty good work ethic, you know, and they're willing to work hard and achieve their goals and do what they need to do. But with that comes a certain sense of modesty. It's just the demographic of our group. I don't know. I was raised in the 70s, and I thought, you know, Reggie Jackson was great. You know, I wasn't always just drawn to the quiet guys. I like the bombastic athletes too. Yeah, you know, so part of that's maybe just my personality. But what I learned in the minor leagues was by showing what you're doing, and you know, part of it's just a subtle way of managing up by them seeing the results of what you do and the effort, and in a subtle way marketing yourselves first of all to the people you report to.
Yep.
It's even before you get into the media thing, but seeing the results and you not being too quiet about it.
Yep.
There's a balance, you know. You don't want to be pushy, you don't want to be entirely a self-promoter, but you should accept praise. And the biggest way on the baseball side I found to do that is to be effective in pregame rain situations or rain delays, because all the people in the press box are watching the rain delay, or they're watching the tarp pregame. They have no idea what you're doing.
Sure.
But they do see effort. They see your drive, they see your effort, and sometimes things go wrong, but when they see what you're trying to achieve and your pace, that goes a long way. And then after a couple years of that, then the people you work for, the general manager, the team president, the owner, they develop a certain level of respect for you and what you're trying to do out there, and it gives you a little more room to, on those days where things don't go perfect, you know, they know that they can expect a certain level of effort and dedication from you.
Definitely.
So, you know.
And to backtrack a little bit, I don't even think I explained that you're the head groundskeeper over there at the Minnesota Twins. And that's been a position 2 decades or 3?
I started in 1995 as head groundskeeper for the Pawtucket Red Sox.
Okay.
So 7 seasons doing that, 4 seasons as the assistant at Dodger Stadium.
Yep.
Then an off-season at Princeton. It was fun. And then Nationals, Washington Nationals, head groundskeeper for 3 years, and then the Twins in 2009. So, that's pretty much the summary of it. A long time.
And again, something I loved about your story was when we talked about, like, what keeps somebody coming back day in, day out, and especially a baseball career in groundskeeping. And you said just the admiration for the game, the love for the game that's been rooted in your life. You know, how does that really play into your day-to-day in interaction with this job?
You'll hear players say to the media, or even amongst themselves, they'll say, this is a hard game. By that, I mean, baseball is a very specific, difficult sport, you know, and I played so much growing up. And thanks to the support of my parents, you know, allowing me to play and attempt to play and at different levels and through college and to coach in college a little bit and coach high school for a year when you know, I was at, probably at a point in my life I should be going seeking a little more structure in my career, and they supported me in that. So I really respect the game and how difficult it is. So from my end of things, I like to see game day run properly. I like to always have one coach I communicate with who's on the same level I am. At the major leagues, we rarely get to talk to the manager because it's between the front office and the media. He's pulled in a lot of different directions. But there's always one or maybe two coaches that you deal with on a day-to-day basis who are looking for the same thing we are, for a smooth operation.
You know, good hops.
For any,
all that good
all,
stuff.
All the, yeah, good hops. Yeah, no bad hops, please.
Well, and, you know, we've done a whole series on that, about that coach, you know, field manager relationship, and how important it is to establish that trust right out of the gate. You know, especially since you've been at a position for so long, when that staff changes and you might see a new face in the dugout or in the clubhouse, how do you approach that to establish that trust, you know, in that first interaction? Or, you know, what's your strategy there?
I like to let them know that I am, on game day, focused on baseball first and, dare I say it, the business side of the game day second. The odd thing about me prior to the umpires taking the lineup card is I'm dealing with the baseball people and there's the business people.
Yep.
You know, and then we get to the umpires, that's a whole other thing. But during the course of the day and dealing with the two people I report to in ballpark operations on weather and game operations, you know, they're focused on things like, all right, you know, are we going to get this game in? Should we start cooking food for the suites? All that kind of, on and on and on.
That's a lot.
But at the same time, I'm dealing with either, you know, the quality control coach or maybe the hitting coach about the early batting practice they want to do, or they, what, you know, they're not concerned with the business side.
Yeah.
They've got the baseball thing in mind. So what I try and do with the baseball people is let them know that my priority is them. You know, I've still got to figure out how to deal with everybody else, but my priority is them on game day, because when they leave town, I've got a whole other host of things to deal with that aren't necessarily baseball related. So once, you know, they establish that early on, that they know I'm going to do whatever I can to allow them to get their work in and make for a good experience, it seems to work out.
Seems to be smooth sailing from there,
yeah,
for sure. And another, you know, core piece of, you know, you talked a little bit about it, where everyone that I spoke to on your behalf attributed your respect for the game as, you know, one of your best qualities. Just that, yeah, you love to see it run smoothly. You love the craft of, you know, taking care of the mound and making sure everything looks great. And not only did they talk about that, but they also talked about the pillar of a mentor that you've been in this industry. And, you know, we saw it just a few minutes ago. You were standing at the corner here, and there was a swarm of people around
you.
Yeah,
it's so wonderful to see people. If not every year, every couple of years, that's the best part about coming to this conference is the people and getting to, you know,
That interaction. How has that mentorship, having the opportunity, you know, to learn from people, but then also when you are in a leadership position, how does that fill up your cup as well? Like, even, you know, you may be the leader and you're bringing someone along with you. How does that, you know, fulfill things that you have to do on the job as well?
Well, I like to let the guys know that, you know, if they can come in and work hard for, even if it's just for 1 year or 2 years, that I'm going to help them move on. That, you know, I know I can tell you where, when you start looking for another job, where a good fit will be and where a good fit wouldn't be, you know, and I can give you a good recommendation, and I know how to talk to non-baseball people or non-turf people.
Yep.
I tell these guys, you go and do an interview. Here's a story. So I went to interview with the Twins February of 2009, right? And I'd been on the phone interviews and all that. So I go into the Metrodome in the offices, and my current boss meets me and takes me upstairs into a room, conference room. So it's me, the vice president of ballpark operations, the team's general manager, who's in charge of baseball, and the team president. So it's me and the three of them, right? They don't know anything about grass.
Yep.
They're assuming I know how to grow grass. I mean, there were a couple of questions of curiosity. Well, how would you do this with the grass and all that? Because they brought five people in, five qualified people that people I knew from this conference. And you think about it, you know, these guys, young guys, spend all their time focused on the craft
yep.
and the grass. But then you go to interview, mm-hmm. and the person you're dealing with might ask more questions more about HR stuff or staff, you know, staffing and budgets and, mm-hmm. And what's your motivation. So that's one way I try and help the younger guys, to talk about, you know, how do you present yourself?
Yeah.
Initially, with not just a resume, but with an interview and such.
Yeah, and building a portfolio. Yeah. And, you know, yeah, grass aside, dirt aside, perfecting that craft aside, but where did you learn the other stuff? You know, how did that come into play, especially when the nature of this job requires, you know, a lot of head down hours where it's like you don't have time to be sitting and going to a conference every right. other week or something right. like that. Where'd you learn all the other good stuff?
So, you know, I started in 1995. I mean, I know the internet existed, but this wasn't on it, this mm-hmm. whole sports turf thing.
Yeah.
So we got the magazine every month.
Oh, yes.
Love the magazine. That was a big thing, reading the magazine. Well, you know, then finally, after going to some local shows in New England, I think in maybe 2000 or something, I went to the first STMA I went to was in St. Louis, of all places. That was fun. And to come to see the trade show and all that. The other thing was vendors. Mm-hmm. The products we would buy, in a lot of cases, you know, we deal with the same people that deal with golf courses.
Yep.
So I met a couple guys over the years up there. I remember Glenn Larrabee and Alan Anderson, a couple guys, Doug Dondero. There's a few guys that they you know, they didn't sell me a lot. I've only got a little over 2 acres. They're not making that much money off me, but they spent the time with me to talk through some things on the turf side. And that was really beneficial. That's another thing I tell the young guys, you come to this, get to know, pick out some vendors that you think, you know, get to know them a little bit, because
yeah,
just because you're 24, you know, in the next 10 years, they might become important people to you.
Yep.
You know? So definitely in those cases and just talking to local people in New England. I say Southern New England's a nice place to grow grass. I was lucky too. You know, it's not too hot in the summer and you know, winter wasn't too bad. So,
baseball is a long, long, grueling season.
Yeah, it's terrible.
And I think we added up, what, 25 years you've been doing this?
Yeah,
something
more or
like
less.
That, more or less. How do you keep the motivation and the energy to do it still?
He's like, don't ask you that question.
You're asking that every day. Just listening to that, I'm tired, man. I don't know how you do it. I envy you, but how do you keep that motivation?
It's a lot. It's. I think when we started doing this, you know, it's just we play baseball and the team would leave town and you get to work on the field. And
mm-hmm.
now the team leaves town and we got other stuff to do. And I think that drains myself and Jared Alley, my assistant, and the other guys on our staff more than the baseball does. The baseball's a physical grind, you know, 'cause it's a long day.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you could be pulling the tarp off at 7:30 mm-hmm. in the morning for a game at 6:40 that night, and you're out of there at, you know, 10:30 and back at it. The games were faster this year. That was a big deal.
Big change.
Big deal. I mean, you say, oh, 20, 25 minutes, but it adds up over the course of a week, you know. But I think what drives me is just the baseball side. I kind of know how to deal with it. You got to go into a homestand prepared. Our cat Mulligan, he passed away a few months ago at age 17 and a half. That's the picture I sent you. Yeah. My buddy. But anyway, so going into homestand, you need three things. I need three things, right, at the house. Or in life, right? Beer, gas in the car, and cat food. Because we didn't feed our cat the kind of food you can get at 7-Eleven, number one. Number two, I hate getting gas. That's the worst thing. You got to go get to work in a hurry in the morning and stop and get gas. So always get gas. And then beer. You can't get beer late at night, at least not where I live. So it's like you got to have that stocked. Right? You can always stop at Taco Bell if you have to at 11:30
sure.
at night. So, yeah, beer, gas, and cat food. That's how I would prepare.
Was Mulligan a shop cat?
No, he was a house cat.
Okay,
no, He was the cat that I would come home at night after a night game, right, and my wife and the kids are asleep,
mm-hmm.
you know. And but he'd wake up, and then he, if it was warm enough, had to be at least 65. You know, he'd come in the backyard with me while I have a couple beers.
Love that.
And he was a great cat. So
beer, yeah. gas, and cat food.
Beer, gas, and cat food.
It's not the grandiose life advice I was expecting.
No.
But
no.
At a simplistic level, it's perfect.
Yeah.
It really is.
But he's a good cat. Yeah.
Well, so. Are you already in the works of getting another one? Because
not
you can't
right now.
Go through a season without that.
No, we my wife, Teresa, adopted a dog a little over a year ago. It's worked out pretty well. So.
Okay. Well, yeah, and I loved that when, you know, we talked in... I sent you a draft of the profile, and you wrote back, and you're like, you know, I probably should have mentioned that I did meet my wife through SFMA. Oh, and we have two kids. And I was like, in typical, you know, fashion, you might have buried the lead on that one.
Yeah, right.
By the way.
Yeah. I thought you were going to say, by the way, we haven't been recording.
Oh, no.
He scared me.
Start
he
over,
scared
huh?
me.
Sorry.
But, you know, how has that helped on the home front, having somebody that kind of understands, you know, the nature of this industry, the nature of your job, but then also has a passion for it? You know, I was talking about your profile with another friend, Andy Amon, Professional Outdoor Solutions, and he was like, oh, yeah, Teresa's a bigger grass nerd, I think, than...
She's way smarter than I am.
Yeah, so how has that helped, you know, what advice can you give to the young college students? Maybe find a match here, because then you guys will understand what each other's
up
against.
There's something to that, I'll say that, in that my good friend with Toro, Paula Sleaford, she's working on an article or something about, you know, women... spouses.
Yep. Oh, very
male
interesting.
And female, you know,
I love
spouses
that.
In the industry, and you just the volume of work I have to deal with. It's so much falls on my wife with the kids when the team's out of town. It's hard.
Yep.
It's really hard. You know. So, and I think a lot of people here would tell you the same thing. And so, but she knew what she was getting into.
Yep. Yep.
I mean, I was with the Nationals doing the same work I'm doing now. When we started dating and no surprises. She's friends with a lot of people here and has been at this conference a number of times over the years. Yeah.
Well, I always say that when I, you know, meet someone working and once, you know, if they give me the rundown, I'm like, oh, wow, that sounds like a lot. You know, I don't feel, you know, you're something, but the real MVP out of the situation is that someone on the home front.
Oh, absolutely.
Holding it all down.
Oh, I know. So,
which my husband's home this week with the two boys.
And, oh, boy.
And, you know, that first night he was, like, very confident. Like, he's going to be able to handle it. Then, I call him the next morning and he is a broken shell of himself. Like, he's like, oh, wow, 3 hours of sleep? How do people operate
at how do you do that? Yeah.
That level.
I know. We've been dealing with that in a long time now.
So, yeah. But, no, I really loved that. And I'm glad that we were able to include that, you know, element to the story. But to switch gears real quick, so, you know, definitely through your time in the major leagues, you know, you're setting the stage for some of our biggest events. How do you think we capitalize on those events that, you know, garner so many eyeballs, you know, for the game happening on the field? How do we create visibility for ourselves through that? How do we capitalize on all the hype, all the momentum of an all-star game or, you know, the World Series? How do we make ourselves more visible for when we don't just have industry people looking, but we have the general public paying attention?
Andy brought that up at lunch today. He said, you know, every time I watch a, you know, if not every last PGA tournament, but a, you know, a big golf tournament, they always spend a minute early on talking about the superintendent. And
yeah,
how
they
get,
do a great job
gets,
of it
yeah,
over there.
Golf
yeah,
golf does that, and we just don't. And as much, you know, obviously over the years, George Toma got, you know, got his face forward and helped our industry in a huge way. But why not Travis Hogan when the Chiefs are home? And, you know, and I will say, in a local media sense, I feel like I get a lot of recognition.
Yeah.
I feel, I'm
thrilled.
I'll tell
you,
thrilled.
They're
thrilled
selling your
that.
Images, your local news, for like $400 a pop.
What? Oh, Getty.
Remember?
Like Getty
yes,
images?
Getty. Yeah. I sent it to Jonathan, our designer,
because
I was looking for photos for your profile.
Yeah.
And I was like, man, this little local media is running quite the operation out of Larry there.
No, they had great locally photos we do him. Good. But in a national sense, it almost is something like we were talking about today, in that, you know, it's the playoffs or it's the All-Star game. And, you know, I mean, you think about people like, I don't know, Trevor Vance at the Kansas City Royals, been doing this for years in a really difficult climate. I mean, that, imagine summer in Kansas City and all the great work he's done over there. But there's a interesting that, you know, the MLB groundskeepers, we meet every year. We meet sometimes in the same place as this, sometimes at a stadium at a different time based on schedules. Mm-hmm. But to meet a number of people over the years from Danny Cunningham with the Yankees that, you know, that may not necessarily come to this, but to get to know what do the Yankees go through, mm-hmm. you know? And some of the teams have kind of similar labor setups to what we do with the Twins, and others are vastly different. Mm-hmm. You know, some are union, some are not. It's kind of all over the place. Some have 12-month employees, some have seasonal, and it's just to learn that, and it's kind of interesting. Yeah.
No, it's definitely interesting to look at golf. I think I've had the opportunity to work at two of the U.S. Women Open.
Okay.
And they literally bring a trophy out for the crew and the superintendents at the end, and they do a whole spectacle at the end of the tournament before they crown the champion of the event. Uh-huh. They give an entire display for the grounds crew and that superintendent.
So after every game, they should bring you.
I think we should make you the face of it. we're going to start it with you.
Something,
something.
If you're 500, you got 80 trophies.
But no, it's a question to consider because, you know, I do think there is a lot of hope for what we have. You know, the next generation that is present here today. I think we have a lot of hope of, you know, embedding them in this industry, giving them all the golden nuggets, but it's still that question of how do we take ourselves out to the general public and really help point the conversations in the right direction. Because sometimes, you know, a perfect example is with the Buffalo Bills and all the snow they got before that game. All the coverage was, look at all the fans that showed up and shoveled snow out of the stadium. Yeah. As if, like, that grounds – and James told us, our coworker, he said the grounds crew – this was – they, what, ended up playing on a Tuesday or a Monday?
Monday, yeah.
The groundskeeper hadn't gone home since Thursday that fall. Like, it's like, why isn't that the thing being talked about?
There are two great stories here. The people in the community, but the grounds crew.
Yeah.
Come on.
Who, like, literally, you know – And also, it's funny because, like, what was the footage that you were getting where, you know, the Bills fans, they're known to have some kind of festivities. And they were, like, you know, shirtless shoveling snow in the stadium. And it's like, we got to get snow out either way. But, again, like, how do we change that conversation to be like, let's get that groundskeeper on the mic and tell us what he's up against.
Like, shirtless in a front-end loader, I guess.
Yeah, and then you have to jump off the back of a truck onto a flaming table. Yeah.
Oh.
Like, what is that they're doing over there?
Yeah. It's amazing.
Oh, my God.
You know, another message for the young people, I say young people, some people under 30 around here, is there's something about what this group does in that there's no aversion to manual labor, but at the same time we have to do all the management. I have to you know, you have to do office work. I mean, we're amateur meteorologists especially in baseball, you know, so it's such a diverse job that, I mean, to be a successful minor league groundskeeper, you know, I think, you know, if you decide to change direction in your career, you're going to probably do pretty well because you've learned how to manage your time, you've learned how to manage people, you've learned how to just manage up, down, over.
Sure.
You know, it's there's a lot going on. It's a lot going on. And I know, you know, same thing, MLS on game day, you know, that's just, and having to run practice facilities in MLS. So it's a dynamic type of job. It's not just, and I think some people, even you probably see it at country clubs too, where people just see the greens crew as, you know, labor.
Yep.
There's so much more involved in it. So much more from I mean, the weather, the nutrients. I mean, I took over spraying from my assistant Jared about 8 or 9 years ago, because it was taking up too much of his time. I felt bad. He lives, you know, far enough away. I said, I'll do it, because I keep changing my mind.
Yeah.
I go in the morning, oh, we're going to spray that at night, and then the weather forecast changes, and I start tweaking products and all this and all that. So, you know, I live close, so I said, I'll spray, you know, that type of thing. But, I don't know. That's one thing the guys we've talked a little bit about is this certain stigma to manual labor, and people think, well, because you do physical work that you're kind of over in this category.
Yep.
And that goes to the whole self-promotion thing.
Yep.
I think the younger members here are more adept at social media than I would be.
Mm-hmm.
But the two of you work in marketing, so you're probably pretty good at that. But that's part of it, you know.
Yep.
And there's probably a balance too, where you're not too much where you're antagonizing your bosses, but at the same time promote your team, promote yourself,
exactly.
promote your staff,
and even taking it offline. And I think it was either Chad or Travis today in the keynote was saying, like, how do the people that are moving money around see you? You know, do they see you as labor, or do they see you as a professional? Because that is what you are. And really branding yourself and setting the expectation up there is going to just make your job easier.
Yeah, I know. I made these notes during lunch. What was it? Oh, sell yourself and become indispensable.
Yep, yep.
That's what I learned from some golf guys. You know, said there's a thing where once you're over 50 and you've been on the same job 15 years, that golf course superintendents start to get a little nervous.
Okay, yeah.
And one advice on TurfNet years ago is make yourself indispensable. Make them feel that if they decide to let you go, wow, what are we going to do now?
Yep.
You know,
yep.
And I kind of take that approach at work. I take on some things that maybe I didn't expect to 10, 15 years ago, but if it's what my boss needs, I'll do it.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Well, it's been such a treat to not only sit down with you today, but really spend some time talking with you about your career through our Pioneers in the Field campaign. So I appreciate all the time you've given us.
Oh, thank you.
But before we let you go, we're going to ask you to, use that meteorology skills. I think I butchered the word there. And we're, he's like, you did. and look at the weather forecast of our industry. What has you excited?
For the industry.
Or professionally, at the Twins, in the industry, what forecast has you excited about the future? And Andy over here is getting, he's now going to be prepared for it, so it's not fair. His is going to sound.
I'll say this after, I was kind of reminded of it today in that I like the direction the SFMA is going as far as some of the educational initiatives, because that whole investment in a four-year degree is a lot. Mm-hmm. For somebody from, say, a working class background and wants to maybe do what I do or be at a university running their fields. So the variation in education opportunities is pretty critical. In fact, we had a neighbor who worked when he was in high school, worked for us one summer, and then he went to a two-year turf program in Iowa. Now he's an assistant superintendent in Montana and loves it. And his parents are like, he just told me he just wants to get to work.
Yep.
He could get into the 4-year turf program. He's ready to go.
Yep.
So he did the 2-year and got at it.
Mm-hmm.
And a sharp kid. And I think between the internet and organizations like this, there's a lot more educational opportunities. I mean, the technology is the obvious thing walking around this trade show. Where that's come since 20 years ago. But if we can educate people without them and I'm not knocking 4-year degrees because I have mine in sociology, right? It's very important.
You're using that every day on the job.
But the more people we can educate to fill the work needs of our industry without them having to go spend $160,000 on a 4-year degree or more, I think the better off. And that will increase our not just our labor pool, but our management pool.
Yep.
Down the road, so that's a big one, And I one last thing I was thinking about today about putting together a crew, and I told you I went to Rhode Island for a friend's funeral in December, and that was my friend Benny who David Benoit, who worked on our crew in Pawtucket. Mainly games and weekends. And he was what we call in baseball a glue guy.
Okay.
You ever heard that term, glue guy?
No.
Kind of a baseball term. So usually one or two guys on the team, and sometimes it's a really high-end player, star player, but usually it's like a backup infielder. And he's a personality guy who brings everybody together.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Right? He can get people to connect with the manager because he's like the in-between. And he knows how to – he has the respect of the star players and the respect of the bench players and all that. And Benny was a glue guy because he'd be having a bad day and he would just bring us all together.
Mm-hmm.
And he'd complain, but it was funny the way he complained, right? You know, everybody's going to complain. It's going to rain and all that. But he had this sense of humor. And he's from New England. He's very direct. You know, I love that about him, too. So we're together so much as a group, especially mm-hmm. in baseball, the crew, that sometimes hiring off the resume becomes secondary to hiring the person.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
When you're dealing with young staff, you know, the guys, you know, who are going to come in for a year or two and then move on to another position.
Mm-hmm.
If the guy's not going to fit, then that becomes a problem because yep. we don't have a staff of 30. You know, if it's full-time guys, if it's, you know, 7 or 8 and there's a couple guys that don't fit and are miserable all mm-hmm. the time, then that affects the other 6. So trying to mesh that becomes for myself and for Jared as much as anybody because he's directly supervising those guys is a challenge. So we definitely like to get to know the person before we bring him in a little bit. Even if it is Zoom.
Yeah.
You know, we got to do Zoom now.
Yeah. Right. You got to have that chemistry, though.
But sometimes, you know, we've been lucky to interview people at this show, and other times you just can't, you know. I mean, you don't expect a 21-year-old kid to, you know, I don't have the budget to start flying in guys for seasonal positions.
Yep.
You've got to just talk to them on the phone or the Zoom. And, you know.
And I'll say there's some impressive young people here at this show.
There really are.
This year. Yeah. Every year, but this year, too. There's some high school turf program kids that came up to me yesterday, initiated a conversation all on their own, and I was floored.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
How much they wanted to learn from an old guy like me has nothing to offer. But just they were brave, and I respect them a lot for that.
Yeah.
So it's a good sign for the industry. These kids, they want to learn. They want to get involved. They want to know about every aspect, whether it's on the field or a vendor. So that's pretty cool.
Definitely.
That's great to hear.
And Andy slipped away, but I will share with you I think in Savannah, he gave a presentation.
There he is.
And he talked about, you know, this major league groundskeeper that he showed up to, you know, maybe shadow, learn a few things. Yeah. And he pulled up and you came out to the car to greet him. And you're like, well, here's a rake. Let's go.
Yeah.
And you were like, you're definitely going to work today.
Yeah.
And so I thought since Andy's our next guest, it's a nice segue.
It's nice to be non-union. You can just have guests come in. Here, go ahead.
We're putting you to work today.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much again, Larry. It's been a pleasure, and I hope it was, you know, as enjoyable for you as it was for us.
Thank you for having me. Thanks. Appreciate it.
Awesome.
Yeah.